This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Kislansky.
And we're your hosts for Art Moves. Today, Eli, we have a phenomenal guest. It's Gina Duncan. Now, she is the president of the Brooklyn Academy of Music, the oldest opera house, essentially.
Well, culture organization in New York,
In the country.
Brooklyn. Is it
true? In the country.
Wow.
It's the oldest. Gina, welcome. So good to see you, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So since the show is called Art Moves, one of the questions we've been asking people is what art moves you?
Film has always been my first love. I think for me, it was because it was just the art form that was constantly on in my house. And so I think most recently what has moved me in film since the pandemic, since it's like reemerging, right. I find it harder to be moved. And I think part of that is because the work that's going to be inspired by and come out of this like moment of disruption hasn't quite happened yet.
Well, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm waiting for that moment. I know I said film, but there was something recently that reminded me that I can be moved. And it was this workshop for a musical that Adrian Marie Brown is working on. Mm-hmm. It was called Healing, a Ritual. And it was a combination of song and speech, like written text.
Oh, I see.
We were amongst the audience. And the music we could sing along to. So we were participating in the space. And that's been moving me most recently. Like, wonderful. I want to not just watch art. I want to participate in it.
So, absolutely. You know, I wanted to just kind of jump off into BAM, you know, and I've been exposed to BAM for over 30 plus years. And I always had a challenge finding myself in the work, you know. It seemed as though at that time, BAM was a place that was trying to attract Manhattanites, you know, or those who, if that's a word, those who live in Manhattan, to that particular venue, even though it was five blocks away from where I lived. I didn't see myself there. Mm-hmm. So you're coming, and I'm wondering if that is so that we will be able to see ourselves there in the programs that you do and that kind of thing. Can you respond to that, Gina?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we are the oldest continuously operating performing arts institution in the country. 161 years old.
Wow.
Ooh.
And we were started by Brooklyn people for Brooklyn people, right? We predated the bridge. So this was a stop where you would come with Frederick Douglass, different people would come. And speak to the people of Brooklyn. And so Thomas Edison, all of these folks came and they presented because this was the cultural venue for Brooklyn. The era that you're talking about, Tony, I think was very Manhattan facing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, there were a lot of reasons for that. What they felt was lacking here or missing here, you know. I know a lot of our board chair talks about this a lot, about the BAM bus, you know, mm-hmm. the bus that would go around Manhattan and do the circuit, pick up people, bring them to Brooklyn to see the
I
show.
I remember
and
the
then
BAM
take
bus.
Them back.
I mean, to the wilds of Brooklyn.
Like, really? Really?
Yeah, really? We were really Manhattan facing. And in 1965, when Harvey came into BAM, a big part of him coming in was to continue to do the quote unquote high art, but also do programming for the community. And at
I don't
that
like
time,
that word high art. What does that mean,
well,
Gina?
Quote unquote. Yeah. I mean, I think it like this was, we are an opera house. We
okay.
are theater. So I, you know, needed right. to be a space for that work, but it also needed to be a space that was doing programming that represented and spoke to the people in the surrounding community, which was at that time largely Black and Brown. So he brought in Mickey Shepherd. Mm-hmm. Went on to go to the Apollo, who did a lot of great programming.
Know her very well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dance Black America, she did. She started,
And then Heart of the Harvey.
651 Arts.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She started 651 Arts. She started Dance Africa. She did a lot of phenomenal programming. And you did have folks like Mary Baraka and others who were doing plays. Alvin Ailey was a resident company at BAM during that time as well and had space. So there was a lot of going on then. But as Next Wave became popular, and that became a hit, the institution, the programmers at the time did start to look to Manhattan.
And I will say it was the next wave. I just remember a lot of very experimental, cutting edge, edgy.
Great work. Yeah, but it was also for a very specific audience.
Exactly.
And it was so avant-garde. It was so out there. I mean, you know, I meet people.
So
and
I don't
talk
feel
about,
bad not getting
no.
it.
Sitting here talking about it, it's like, you know, I'm consider myself somebody who's really innovative and I could deal with a lot of avant-garde, but some of those things I would scratch my head and go,
I think honestly, like I talked to folks who came and they're like, oh, I went to this show and there's only five of us there. I don't think so much of it was about getting it. It was about being seen in this place that was doing this show, these things that were kind of out there. You know, I think for a lot of folks, it was like experiencing something that was, unique and different and just, and I know a lot of folks who love BAM, but they're like, what I love about it is I can come to something and I don't have to like it.
I was wondering if you were thinking about, or is there any plans for bringing in new facilities or new?
Well, actually, I'd like to know what you have over there right now. I mean, you have, there's
the Harvey,
right? The Harvey, and then there's BAM. Is there anything, I think you have the Karen?
So we have four buildings. We have the Peter J. Sharp Opera House. And in that building, we have the opera house and we have a four screen cinema that was a playhouse that was converted into a four screen cinema. Then we have the Fisher building where we do a lot of our education programs, some community programs, and we also do performances. It's a 200 seat black box. And then we have the Harvey, which is, you know, the legendary theater venue and every artist loves performing in the Harvey. And that's 800 seats when it's live performance. And that's where we have a play now, Lorraine Hansberry revival. We will have a new space called BAM KBH, which is named after, as you said, Karen Brooks Hopkins. And that is in, that was, you know, I was hired in 2017 to run the film program at BAM. And when I was hired to also come up with the plan for the opening of that building.
She must be just over the moon.
It's now 2023. And now I'm back to open this building. So we, it's been a long road, in getting that up, and we'll be sharing that cultural condo with 651 Arts, Mocada, and Brooklyn Public Library. So we'll have three more. Yeah, it's a multicultural space. And a big part of the city selecting these, organizations and putting us in there together is that we will actually program together. So we're also excited about those moments when we actually work together and what that looks like. And so, BAM will have three cinemas, a 25-seat house and two 100-seat houses. And then we'll also have our archive fully open to the public. And we'll have a small black box space for education and also performance, about 70 seats.
Do you see yourself also expanding that partnership or collaboration with other cultural organizations? I can imagine you would, right? Center for Fiction, because there's a number one that are coming in, too.
Yeah, and we do partner well, like right now with folks, I think, especially out of the... In the pandemic, we found the need. I think a lot of film centers and other cultural institutions, we all were like, oh, we need to work together. And I think now as we're coming out of it, there's not as many resources and not as much money out there. So I think we also are finding that like we have to partner, right?
Absolutely. And it's good that culturals are thinking that way. The fact that you have to partner as opposed to compete. Now, I'd like to know, what does it feel like to be the first African-American woman to lead this cultural organization, as well as the fact that there are a number of organizations now that have African Americans leading? We have the Brooklyn Arts Council with Rasu Jalani. We have
Brick
with Wes Jackson. Why do you think the board made this bold move? And I call it bold because it hadn't been made before.
Yeah. And the community has asked for it. I mean, the beauty of having an archive is you got the facts. So there have been moments in history in which Brooklyn, Fort Greene, folks from the community have said there needs to be someone of color in leadership at BAM. When is that happening? I think honestly, the disruption of the pandemic and then the uprisings post the George Floyd murder created an entryway for me. I think that if those things hadn't happened, it wouldn't have forced like the real conversations, but not just the conversations, the demands for change. And I think when that was demanded, the boards recognized that, okay, we gotta think more broadly about who can be in this role. So I feel I'm happy to be in this role, but I also feel great pressure because, and I know I'm not alone in this. It's not as if all of the new leaders of color are coming into institutions that are like extremely healthy, right? We're coming out of the disruption of the pandemic. We also had business models that were kind of wonky even before the pandemic. So we're coming into institutions at like a really critical time. So I think that's the challenge that we have is like we're now in the door, but we're being asked to like fix broken systems.
The real hard, complicated, very difficult work.
Yeah.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. We're talking to Gina Duncan, the president of Brooklyn Academy of Music. So one of the things that we've been talking about, and Russell Jelani, who's a new executive director of Brooklyn Arts Council, is this idea of creating a cultural summit. And I think, you know, to your, you know, talking about the fact that the need for partnerships and institutions working together, I think that would be something that might be of interest to BAM, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it is. I'm very transparent. I try and admit what I think is kind of scary because typically leaders are not transparent.
That is so true. And especially in art and culture. It's this interesting dynamic of tightness.
Yeah. But I want to be in a space. I want to be in a space with other leaders and say, okay, let's figure this out. Because I think in a lot of ways we're stepping on each other. Everyone is trying to, has their community program, has their education program, has their theater program, their dance program, but how can we figure out like, okay, if you're going to do this, then I'm going to do this. If you do that, I'm going to do that. And so we can create a healthy ecosystem that's like fully serving the people of Brooklyn, the people of New York City and the artists, right? It doesn't help if we're competing with this for the same thing. We should figure out how to differentiate ourselves so that we can make a complete picture.
It speaks to a really 21st century model of cultural institutions, which, you know, I do a lot of writing about, you know, because out of my other life, my real life, which is kind of funny because it is your real life. But I have a company called Unified Field, and one of the things we do is consult on the Museum of the Future. And it's more of this idea of like institutions being a network, you know, that it's not just a destination in the city, but it's dynamically connected to and of the city. And that's why I think in some ways that BAM is trying to, in some ways, you would say, broaden the audience and bring different kind of productions in that are without losing the edginess, but things that might appeal to people who are more residential.
I think it's interesting because I come from film and I come from programming in a cinema. And when you work in it, when you program in a cinema, you have to think hyper-local. So I've always had to program for the people right around the corner, right? And when you are doing that for performing arts, you tend to think more like you're bringing international artists. Or like I said earlier, BAM was looking to Manhattan. It's thinking more broadly. And I do get that. You have more seats to fill. But now that the Brooklyn around BAM looks completely differently than it did 30 years ago, and audiences' behaviors are also changing. Audiences are now everyone's a last minute ticket buyer, as opposed to before it was like Black and brown audiences were last minute ticket buyers. So now like how you connect with people, how you talk to people, it completely is changed for a lot of these cultural institutions. And so they have to figure out now, okay, how do we speak to the person right next door?
And so you see film as a place where this can easily happen by doing more film programs?
Well, so when
in terms of local community and local traffic.
I mean, what types of films?
Yeah. I do think so. When I came to BAM in 2017 to run the film programs, I oversaw the cinema operations and the programming. At that time, our repertory film program was just like any other repertory film program in the city. It was great. It was very respected. But it wanted to be the MoMA or the Film at Lincoln Center of Brooklyn. And I came in and I kind of pushed at that idea. I didn't want to be them. I wanted to be BAM. And I was looking at the history of the film program, and I read the 1998 New York Times article about the cinemas. And in that, it was all quotes from Black and brown business owners in Fort Greene in response to the announcement, which was saying that BAM was doing film to speak to the local community and specifically to Black and brown people. This would be the door into BAM where they might see themselves. I think it was a Saul Williams film, which was the first one in there. And then I was looking at the program and I was saying, okay, well, but that's not exactly what happened, right? You know, what ended up happening is that it went back to kind of that default of we want to be MoMA. We're putting up films and it doesn't matter if only two people show up.
Right. That aren't necessarily accessible to that audience.
Yeah. Yes. So I, at that time that I started, Oscar So White was a big movement online, and I had issues with that with that movement because I felt like it was erasing the history of Black and brown people and women in film. It's not that they weren't there. It's just that they were not supported so that they can continue making work. But they were very much a part of the canon. They just weren't being shown that way. So I changed our repertory film program and I said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to focus on this work, work from women, work from people of color. And we're going to do that year round. It's not going to be a one at a time. This is how we differentiate ourselves from the others. If you want to see Scorsese or any, you can go to the other venues. You could come to BAM and interact with artists that you've never heard of. And a lot of these films weren't available on streaming. They weren't available elsewhere. You needed to come into a cinema to see it. So we made that change. And
has it been successful?
Yeah. I mean, it created
this is when she was,
yeah, when I was there in 2017. Right? Okay. So we did. And, you know, the audience grew. We had in 2019, we had about 400,000 people come through just film alone, which was, I think for main stage, it might've been about 150,000. So, I mean, the film program reached more people and it was also speaking to more people. And I find quote unquote non-traditional audiences to be just as adventurous, if not more.
Yeah, it's very interesting, yeah.
You know, especially when they trust who's serving them, who's giving them that work. And so I've always really had issues when people are like, oh, people just want to see traditional. I was like, no. If they trust you, they will go with you anywhere. They'll tell you if they didn't like it, but they will go with you anywhere. So now I'm trying to figure out how BAM, you know, we have a Pina Bausch show on right now.
Right.
How do you talk about Pina Bausch and her work in such a way that more people find their way into that?
Exactly.
That's exciting
to
me.
And that I imagine is quite an exercise, right?
Well, yeah. It's a classic challenge of institutions.
Right. Yeah.
Inclusion.
Right.
Yeah. They talk about inclusion. They talk about broadening the audiences, but, you know, they struggle.
And that's why
I think, if I may, mm-hmm. that's why I think like hiring somebody like yourself is really a huge step forward.
Well, I hope I can do the job well, but I think it's, you know, I will go to a Pina Bausch show. We have Agua. I remember Cafe Mueller and Rite of Spring and completely moved by it, you know, and that, you know, I didn't need to see people who looked like me in that space. I just needed to know that I could be in that space
and feel welcome in that space
and feel welcome in that space. Exactly. Yeah. And I, you know, I think just like how institutions tend to talk about the work is there an assumption about who's coming, and the assumption about who's coming is people who already know who Pina Bausch is, who already, and you can't, and so we in film, when I ran the film program, we changed how we talked about films. We didn't assume anything on people. We told them why we were doing it. We found different entry points for folks and that allowed people to come in. So even if it was like a series that had nothing to do with anything that you claim or your people, you would be like, oh, but this sounds interesting. This is about families and this is about, and like, I have a family. I relate to that. I'm going to go to that.
You're listening to Our Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. And we're talking to Gina Duncan. And this is a fascinating conversation. I wanted to better understand how you are prioritizing or balancing audiences.
So the programming is set long before I come in.
Ah.
Like, or I came in. So this next year's programming, I'll be much more involved, not necessarily in the programming, but in how the approach to audiences, how we talk about things. So I'm really excited about that. I'm not the type of programmer that likes to segment. I don't like to assume, you know, that this work is only for this audience and this work is only for that audience. I think that you've already failed. You've also failed the artist at that point, because if you limit their audience, then how are they going to have a sustainable career booking in different places across, you know? BAM is interesting in that we do so much. We have so many different kinds of audiences. One of the unique things that we have is we actually have a really young audience for our film program. And that's very rare for an art house cinema. That tends to be an older audience. For our main stage shows, for our live performances, I'm seeing that audience get younger than it was when I started in BAM in 2017. And I'm really excited about that, because what it's saying is that younger folks are like wanting to come out and experience work that maybe they saw online or they've just heard about, which wasn't the case before. Our next wave audience was older, for quite some time, but that's starting to change. And I think also we're experiencing what a lot of places are experiencing, which is older audiences a little bit more reluctant still to come out. But I think in time, folks are going to come. In terms of seniors, we have different senior programs. I will always plug film. Going to the movies is a great senior experience. And, you know, we all of our program is available to
we
that.
We could sit and watch.
Exactly. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, so the seat's really close to the stage. No. Large type.
Get comfy.
We have senior programs. We have senior programs that we do through our community, right. Our community programming division. And they have senior cinema. So they have, we just started a senior book club. Which they just had a book talk with Caitlin Greenwich, who did Liberté. We have dance parties for seniors, oh, which sweet. Is really great. I would invite you, Eli, because there's never as many men as the women would like.
Yeah, I'm sure my wife would appreciate that.
You'll be getting hit in
trouble. You're just dancing.
Yeah, sure. That's what they say. Yeah, we're just dancing. But
yeah,
no, but, so, I was thinking about, so like, you know, it's really exciting to hear about this. But the other thing I was thinking about, the other side of the spectrum, which is, as we used to call in Brooklyn, the youth.
Yeah.
But the youth. So, but is there anything or is there programs now or considering programs for young creators, like high school students who want to get into the arts? Is there something that BAM is doing or considering? Because I think that might be interesting.
We have internship programs for high school students at BAM. We are in schools all across the city with arts education curriculum. We also have Word Sound Power, which is an annual show that we do. So we go into the schools. It's poetry, it's song, it's music. And then we invite everyone to BAM and they come and they watch the show. And it's just an audience of teens. I think that the one thing we don't do a lot of is film for teens, but everything else is performing arts. It's performing arts focused. Yeah.
Is there anything on the business side of it? The reason I'm asking is that many years ago, we did this wonderful program for the Brooklyn Library called My Own Biz. And it was an online resource for high school students who want to start their own business.
Yeah.
But about the management of arts, is that something of interest?
No, that is of interest.
That's something BRIC does, though.
BRIC does, yeah.
You know, this is a big ecosystem like you're speaking
exactly.
of.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think those are the things I'm excited about to talk about with BRIC and with Wes, which is, okay, you all have this great media center. You have this. We have, you know, access to artists. We have spaces, live performance. And I think that, you know, like you said, you could be a teen in Brooklyn and just go to BRIC and learn podcasts, learn media, come to BAM.
Exactly.
Learning. And
being
I also
hear an ecosystem.
Exactly.
That there's a structure to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also could be a breeding ground for young talent.
Exactly.
Well,
that's
exactly.
For a channel,
that's the outcome.
Right?
That is the outcome.
That is the outcome.
I did want to talk to you about the NFL. Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah. So that was a while ago in your career. How did that inspire you? In fact, how did you end up there, so to speak?
I ended up at the NFL because I was graduating from college and I felt like, oh, my parents paid for me to go to school. I got to get a job. And they came to campus and interviewed. They only interviewed people who were not film majors. And by that time, I had shifted to English. I really enjoyed the experience at the NFL because there were so many resources. All the games at that time were shot on film. Mm-hmm. I really learned how to edit. I learned how to storytell visually, but also the written word. We had recording studios. We had like orchestras come
a
in.
Great lab for you, right?
Yeah.
Great
lab. And they had, you know, you would watch those films, especially on slow-mo. It was like watching ballet. It was like watching an opera between the music, et cetera. So it was a great experience. And it also taught me how to fight for myself. I mean, I was 22 when I started working there and one of two Black women working. So I was young and, you know, and I really had to stand up for myself to get assignments, to do, you know, to get opportunities that others were getting more quickly than I was. And I think that that really helped me for the rest of my career to stand up for myself. And then once I got the opportunity, make sure I nail it. Mm-hmm.
So after you did football, you went to Sundance, right? Which is quite a leap.
So I left football. I went to LA.
Right.
I worked at different production companies. I came back to New York. I worked at an art house in Westchester County, then BAM. And then I went to Sundance for two festivals, so 18 months. I did two online festivals, their first online festival during the pandemic and then the second. And I planned the second one also in person, but we ended up having to cancel like 2 weeks before because of Delta. And that was a great experience because Sundance is an interesting organization. It doesn't actually have to think about programming for audiences. because it's a captive audience mm-hmm. on the mountain. They're just, they create the experience and you pick your film. I've always
and
thought
your wardrobe.
About, yeah, exactly.
<And your wardrobe. laughs>
I've always had to think about audiences. I've always had to think about community and using the art to connect people. So that was an interesting, you know, challenge for me, but also I think for them as well, because I was asking them questions about, well, who's seeing this? Especially because you're doing it online. It's a different thing. And they hadn't really thought about that before. They didn't have to.
I'm wondering, what was it like to work at BAM, then leave, and then come back?
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, right. You know what are the challenges with something yeah. like that?
And also, what new insights that you...
Yeah. I love the experience of working at Sundance because I planned two festivals from my house. And because everyone was LA based and I was New York based, I had my mornings to myself. So I actually had, for the first time, had like a life during that time. Mm-hmm. And I only say that to say that it gave me a lot of space to heal and process what was going on during the pandemic, but also like what I had experienced at BAM, because it was a lot. It was a lot when we went through the shutdown, and, you know, and it was a lot as a leader in the organization trying to get people through that and also, you know,
and then
give
the
them
expectations
space.
That and folks then the have expectations. Of what you're supposed to be able to do during that time.
Exactly.
That was really insane.
It was a lot. So I was given space to just even process that. And then also, I had a lot of time to think about, well, what type of space do I want to be in? And while I was at Sundance, the executive director there retired. And she was like, you really need to think about leading. And so I spent a lot of time thinking about, like, can I lead? Should I lead? What type of organization should I lead? If I led an organization, what would that look like? And then at the end of it, I was like, if I led an organization, I'd want to go back to BAM. Like, that's where I want to be. Right. And BAM called and said, we want you to interview for this position.
So you had that thought before they asked you.
Yeah.
She was attracting. Yeah. She was attracting. That's what we've been hearing during COVID. People who just created that stillness or whatever it was, you were able to attract to yourself.
If we're sitting at this table 5 years from now and we're talking about what you already accomplished, what would that look like?
It is a trick question. This unsexy thing, the unsexy things, but the real things is, a strong foundation. Like, I want to make sure that when I leave this position, whoever comes into it can just hit the road running, right?
Oh, wow.
It's, you know.
Wonderful. So there's cleanup to do.
Clarity around what BAM is. I have found even with board and folks close to the organization, there seems to be like, there's not a joint vision around what BAM is and who BAM serves. And then lastly, I want to just like put to bed this idea that arts institutions can't center both artists and audiences. This idea that like community is in contention to the work that we do as opposed to the work that we do is for community. Artists don't make work just to make, like they want to have a conversation with people. They want to connect. And I think that that's what I want to change.
This is such an interesting place for us to end our conversation, unfortunately. Gina, this has been delightful.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very happy that BAM, this was a very good decision on BAM's part.
Thank you.
To put you in that spot. And just so you know, you've got a lot of friends out here and folks really just looking at the work that you're doing and just really applauding you.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Eli. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. No, it's been great. Really appreciate it. Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.